Welcome to the Authentically Successful Show. I'm Carol Schultz, founder and CEO of Vertical Elevation, a talent equity and leadership coaching and advisory firm. We partner with founders and CEOs to create talent-centric organizations where they either don't currently exist or rebuild organizations into talent-centric cultures. We are committed to supporting your values through creating a healthy, successful company, leveraging the best talent, retention, development, and succession strategies. Listen at the end of the show for information about becoming my next guest on one of the most important podcasts for building thriving companies in about 40 minutes. Here we go. Hi, welcome to the Authentically Successful podcast. My special guest today is Rob McKinney, CEO of Raven Alaska. Rob, welcome.
Thank you so much, Carol. It's quite the honor to be invited to be on your show.
Well, it's an honor to have you. Tell us a little bit about Raven Alaska.
So Raven Alaska is a company that started in 1948. It's had several names over the years and had some tumultuous ups and downs. It provides a vital link for those in rural Alaska that live in disconnected villages. Mm. As most of you know, Alaska is the largest state by far in the Union and is not served by the highway system. So the people that live in these rural villages absolutely depend on their very lives for air transportation to get their goods and services in, to be able to get back to doctors, and just be able to connect to the rest of the world via the National Transportation Network. And Raven provides that service for 14 communities.
Well, that's really interesting. Raven is Alaska's largest regional carrier, correct?
Absolutely, for being based right here in the state of Alaska.
Right, right. Well, and I think we talked a little bit about Alaska Air.
Yes, right? they clearly fly Alaska Airlines. They're a good partner of ours. They fly larger jets, but they're based in Seattle.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I never knew that. I would have assumed that they'd be, you know, headquartered in Anchorage or somewhere like that.
They moved at some point.
Yeah. Raven Alaska is privately held. Yeah,
that's correct.
But in the past, it's been owned by private equity. Can you tell us a little bit about like how that all occurred?
It's a complicated story. Around 2015-2016, JF Lehman came in and purchased the assets, I believe starting with Corvus, but they ended up putting together five different air carriers. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to mishmash these five different carriers into one system all called Raven. But they all had different management styles, they had different management people, they had different operating systems, and it was a struggle at best. And then they were carrying lots and lots of debt. You fast forward to 2019, and then the Pinair portion of the Raven conglomerate, the Raven Air Group conglomerate, had the fatal accident out in Dutch Harbor, which really started their decline. Mm-hmm. And then just a few months later is when COVID hit. And it was in April, it was April 5th of 2020 when they had to file for bankruptcy and actually put the entire airline on the ground.
Oh, dear. And that was all due to COVID, really. Yeah.
Well, it was due to lots of things. They were carrying $95 million in debt. And for an airline this size, that's an enormous amount of debt. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the accident coupled with the debt service that they were having with the complications of all the management. So they had more staffing than they probably needed. They weren't efficient because they were trying to run five separate systems. And so there was lots of things, and COVID probably was just the last nail in the coffin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So is that normal? You've been in this business for many, many years. Is it normal for a regional, you know, small regional airline like yours to be carrying that amount of debt?
No, that's not normal at all. Mm. I don't know what their philosophy was or why they were doing it, but they were acquiring all these airlines when it was really kind of the heyday of aviation. And so they were paying full retail value for people that didn't necessarily otherwise wanted to sell. So that's kind of the reason why they ended up with so much debt.
Oh, golly. So you've been in this business for a long, long time. Tell us a little bit about your journey and how you became a pilot.
Sure. So it started
and then subsequently a CEO.
It's definitely not a straight line between here and there. Hopefully that it can be an inspiration to somebody else. But I got my first flying lesson when I was 16. My parents was watching the local PBS channel in rural Indiana, and the local flight school offered flying lessons as one of the sales for the benefit of the PBS station. Mm-hmm. So they bought that for me. And so at 16 years old, I go to the airport and I go out flying, and it was kind of cool. I mean, I wasn't like completely wowed by it, because I was determined I was going to be a veterinarian. I grew up on a farm and I loved animals and I was going to care for animals. But after about, it was six lessons. And so I had seven total hours to my name of flight instruction. And the guy gets out of the plane and says, take it around the pattern by yourself. And I'm like, at 16 years old, I guess I was too dumb to be afraid. And so I take off and everything's just working like normal, like he had just trained me. But as I turned the corner to start heading downwind, I kind of looked across the horizon. I realized I'm 1,000 feet off the ground in this machine with no pause button on it, and nobody's going to get it back on the ground but me. And it was transformative. It was like this amazing, like, oh my gosh, if I can do this, I really can do anything. And it just was this huge epiphany for my life. And it was just this incredible moment for me. So I ended up landing without incident. And it was, the rest was there. I kind of changed gears, and I still ended up going to Purdue University, but for aviation instead of the veterinary school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that ended up being the trajectory of my life.
So how did you end up as CEO of Raven?
So I go to school, and I was not one of these, I kind of fell through the cracks where I didn't end up with a whole bunch of student aid. So I was working two jobs, and I could just do the math that I was going to run out of money. So I loaded up on school and was carrying between 20 to 22 credit hours and working two jobs. So I finished in 3.5 years, not because I'm smart. It was just because I was just determined and to not run out of money. So I finished in the 3.5 years. I got my first job, and aviation was really in the dumper back then. There was companies that was charging you $10,000 to go to work for the first year for $10,000. So you were paying them your first year salary as this retention fee and training fee to go to work there. And about half of my class at Purdue didn't even get flying jobs. They had to go work as waiters or whatever else. It was just a terrible time. So I was fortunate that I had a job lined up. It was at a private boarding school. They had their own airport and own fleet of planes. So I would teach these rich kids how to fly, but then I had to do like all the lawn maintenance, and I changed the oil in the airplanes. And I did just a little bit of everything just to keep, I ran the whole airport by myself. Wow. And I transitioned from that to a job that people, I don't think a lot of people even knew existed. I hauled canceled bank checks at night. So the banks back before electronic anything would put physical bank checks in bags and then throw them on these airplanes. And kids like me would fly them all night long to get them from the Federal Reserve back to the bank. And I did that. And it was a crazy job. There's all kinds of stories I could tell you, but that was kind of a burnout gig. It was really difficult job to do. So then I transitioned to FedEx, where I flew the smallest airplane that FedEx offered. And I got to see all over the whole Caribbean, and just, I flew airplanes everywhere, and it was a good job too, except that it was also burnout. Aviation was still in the dumper. I still wasn't on the path up. I wasn't climbing the ladder. I was flying literally cat litter around a lot of the time. So I got fed up and I quit. And so I bought real estate, and I just ran some rental real estate that I had for a couple of years, and I jonesed in to get back in aviation. You know, you do something like this, you want to like do it. So I just go back to the airport and said, hey, you got like a part-time job for me? I got several thousand hours and lots of multi. And they made me the chief pilot walking in the door. I'm like, what happened? holy moly, the life has changed. So I take the job, and I'm getting into it. Then I realized I was working for a complete shyster. This guy had to make me the chief pilot because he was on his seventh crash. And I'm like, this is not just a place for me. So I got recruited away to run what's called an FBO, where it's like a parking spot for private jets where they fuel and they do charters and all kinds of stuff in Texas. Mm-hmm. And I did that for 2 years, but then the guy wanted to sell it out kind of out from under me. So then I went from there to go fly corporate jets for Flexjet. So I flew rich people around in Learjets for a couple of years. And, you know, things had slowed back down. And then, you know, now I was kind of stuck as a co-pilot and didn't really see any. And it was kind of a, it was a tough gig too. You're on the road 21 days a month and you didn't see your friends and you couldn't, you know, participate in life. So there was this ad to be the chief pilot for a commuter airline in Maui. And I'm like, well, what the heck? Let's give that a try. And so I go out there and, you know, because as a pilot, there was a really small value add that, you know, you can only be so good and you're trading your time for money and you can do a really good job for those customers, but you can't do anything else. Well, in that kind of role where I could mold new pilots and I had a whole airline basically to run, I ended up leaving that job as executive vice president. And I felt like I was really making a difference. I still love flying and I still loved what I did. And I still trained pilots and did all those kinds of things. But I could have so much more of a value add for, you know, especially new pilots, they start their career. And a small interesting side note is, you know, at that point I still had my degree from Purdue, but I ran across one of the first season of The Apprentice. So I was really into that show, that Donald Trump show that started. And one of the contestants was there on Maui and I knew him because I watched the show. So I spent the whole day with him. And at that point, he was a motivational speaker. So boy, at the end of the day of talking to this guy, I was like on fire. I was going to do everything. So that's when I went back to school and got my MBA while I was still working. And that's how it kind of progressed to where I left as executive vice president and I transitioned to chief operating officer. And then I got recruited away to start an airline from scratch. And so I moved back to the Pacific Northwest and I started as chief operations officer and then got promoted to CEO. And then when that had started to run its course, the original airline I started with in Hawaii, the new owner, who's like the fifth owner, he was 74 and wanted to retire. So he brings me back to be CEO of that. And I was just going to be hanging out there. I mean, life was good. I had this awesome house near the beach. And then we ended up getting bought out. And so I stayed on to help the transition and, you know, put it all together. And that's when I met my current partner, Tom Shea. And he says he had this idea for flying people over traffic in LA.
This and is we, float shuttle, right?
This float shuttle, yeah. So okay. I thought, well, this is an interesting idea. And he sent me the spreadsheet and I kind of marked it up, sent it back. And usually people give up, but he didn't. And so he sent it back to me. I'm like, this is an awesome idea. So we started spending more and more time on it. And sure enough, we, you know, it was, this brings us up to September of 2019. Mm-hmm. You know, he had been making pitches to all these potential investors and raised the money that we need. He says, it's time to start an airline. So, okay. So I dug in, rolled up my sleeves and from September of 2019 to February of 2020, we stood up this airline and had all the pilots. We had signed big customers that were just really impressive for a brand new company that we're going to put their employees in our airplanes to fly them to work so they didn't have to sit in traffic. And it was just getting so much traction. And then March of 2020 happened and there was no more traffic to fly over.
Right.
And trying to convince 8 strangers to get into a little aluminum tube sitting next to each other was like, there was just no way. So we realized we had to just give up on that. But you know what I'm really impressed with Tom and myself, like we could have just hid in the corner and said, you know, given up and say, you know, this is, you know, we took a shot at it and lost, but we realized there's got to be other airlines in trouble. And I just coincidentally said, we should take a look at Raven. I think they have lots of debt. And it was literally 2.5 weeks later is when they filed for bankruptcy. So we just went after it and started dialing for dollars and like trying to round up investors and trying to put this whole deal together. And, you know, raising money to buy a bankrupt airline in the middle of a pandemic is not as easy as you might think.
Yeah, right.
And so but we just... We didn't
exactly
get up.
What I was thinking. How easy it would be.
So we pulled it all together. We put our bids in, and July 9th we were told we were the successful bidders. And it was kind of ironic that nobody saw us coming because, you know, who are these two guys? And I had never even gotten clear to California. I was still living on Maui at the time. And, you know, it's like these two guys from California, what do they know? And sure enough, and here we were. So yeah, I didn't even know clear up to the last minute that this was going to work out. And then I get the word that we had won the bid July 9th. I'm sitting in my house in Maui and July 12th, I was here in Anchorage and I've been here ever since. So
you're not only the CEO, but you're the co-owner.
I am. I'm a minority owner, but yes, I'm partial owner as well.
Okay. So How many owners does the company have? Who's the majority owner?
So Josh Jones is a majority owner, and by far he's chairman of the board. And, you know, he's the one that made this happen. He saw faith in what we did. He believed. He was a minority investor in Float Shuttle. So he saw what Tom and I were able to do, and just had faith in what we could pull together and our management style and technique and our attention to detail. So, you know, he's the one that backed this. And so Josh has just been a phenomenal partner to work with.
Fantastic. What's Tom's relationship to the company? Where's his involvement?
So he's president and he's partial owner, the same as me. And so we're very complimentary. We come from different backgrounds and have different styles. So we kind of just divvy up the workload and you know, attack what makes sense for each of us.
Mm-hmm. How many employees do you have?
Right now we're at 388. But with our latest announcement, we're probably by this time next year, we'll be well over 500.
Awesome. So that's going to be because you're just going to be getting busier. What are your expansion plans to get from, you know, near 400 to 500?
So we're working on this new project that's audacious at its forefront. So Raven Alaska is a commuter airline that flies Dash 8 products between 37 seats and 50 seat turboprops. But we're in the process now of standing up a new brand called Northern Pacific Airways that will operate narrow body Boeings between Asia and the continental U.S. using Anchorage as a hub.
Fantastic. That was my next question, is if you have any, you know, plans to expand outside of Alaska. So what are you going to be dealing with from a competition standpoint when you start to expand outside the state and into, you know, Asia, for example?
So there's obviously people serving those routes right now. Pretty much most of them go direct. You know, our model is based on the Iceland Air model. So they use Iceland as a stopping over point between Europe and North America. So we're going to do the same thing, using Anchorage as a stopover point between Asia and North America. So we think that we're going to be going after a different market, the kind of the lower end, the low cost market, and we can provide a product to allow more people to travel. So, you know, our position is we're really not going to be competition. We're not going to be siphoning off passengers that would buy a high-end product on one of the bigger airlines.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that with a stopover in Anchorage, people will say, hey, let's spend a few days here?
Well, that's absolutely the goal. That's what Iceland Air has been able to do. And, you know, since we already have a network of regional carriers, like, hey, let's go spend the day salmon fishing, or let's go ride a sled dog on a glacier, or all of just the plethora of phenomenal experiences you can only have here in Alaska.
Well, that's really, really interesting. So, you know, you've been at this for a year, right? With the new airline. What impact would you say you've had on the industry?
You know, on the industry, I think that we've sent the signal that all it takes is determination and you can focus and you can turn even the worst situation around. For Alaska, I would humbly and respectfully say that I think we provided a service that was desperately needed. Mm-hmm. There's people that were just suffering because they couldn't get to the doctor and they couldn't get food and they couldn't get to where they needed because they were so isolated. They were depending on charters that would maybe come once or twice a week instead of having daily service like what Raven provides. Mm-hmm. So I'm so grateful that, you know, we've been able to reestablish reliable service that people can actually count on here in the state of Alaska.
Is there anything in particular that kind of bugs you about your industry? Aviation.
Oh, there's lots of things. I pretty much, from my experiences, the worst part is people get into this for the wrong reasons. From the outside looking in, the airline business and aviation in general looks so glamorous and sexy and like, oh my gosh, this is just something we need to do. And so many people get into this business purely for ego driven reasons.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. It's
so surprising.
It's atrocious about some of the egos that get into this and for all the wrong reasons. Tom and I, we do this because we have servant hearts. There was lots of bankrupt airlines that we could have picked that might have been a bigger deal. There was one that was flying sports teams around that had a better EBITDA. But we focused on Raven because we saw there was a need here. And if another big private equity firm would have come in here, they wouldn't have started this airline back up. They would have just broken it up and sold it for the constituent right. parts. And then these communities would have just been stranded. So I think, you know, the biggest level reason is like people just do the airline business for the wrong reasons. They're kind of cold and heartless. And quite frankly, I can't tell you how many people told me what a terrible name Raven had. And they said that you're just going to have to change the name. It's so terrible. Everybody hates Raven. And it was because of the previous leadership really had this corporate mentality that, you know, you're going to pay our change fees. You're going to pay to call our call center. You're going to pay, you know, excess baggage fees. You're on and on and on. And you know, so I internally made the joke. I said, okay, we're going to keep working on rehabilitating the Raven brand until it's not a four-letter word anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fantastic because, you know, as certainly, you know, we're all consumers of airlines, right? And it's interesting because, it makes me think back to, gosh, this must have been, you know, in the early 90s when Gordon Bethune took over Continental and turned it around. It was a horrible airline, you know, horrible. and you know, you see that. And then you look at the story of Southwest and how they completely disrupted air travel, right? Totally disrupted it.
Absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned that. I actually have Worst to First sitting on my bookshelf right behind me. So I don't forget that it's truly the customers. One of the first things that I did when I got here is I had a previous partner that was phenomenal at customer service. So I forced even the mechanics and everybody at Raven had to come back through. And the company affectionately started calling it Charm School, but it was a whole week of customer service training. And I think it's paid dividends. If you look at our social media posts now, people are just excited about, you know, how they're treated and how they get attention to. And, you know, even when we screw up from time to time, that we go out of our way to make it right. And so I'm really proud of the team that we have here. And I'm super grateful to all the citizens of Alaska that gave us another shot when, you know, maybe legitimately they didn't have to.
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, you know, one might look at them and think, well, they don't have a choice. That's well, nobody, right?
they didn't, but they, you know, there's Amazon, there's other, but our numbers are almost pre-COVID now numbers. We're outboarding what all of our projections were. So yes and no, that yes, you know, some of them are stuck, but not every place that we fly, there's competitors and we fly to some places with roads and they still choose to get on Raven.
What was it? So the airline was it still operating while in bankruptcy?
It was not. No, they put on April 5th, none of the employees knew it. They just put the planes on the ground and told everybody to go home, turned all their badges off. And those planes sit on the ground literally until October.
So that
created all kinds of challenges to itself. We rehired 300 people in 30 days.
That was my question. How did you go about rehiring? And obviously you started with 300, as you just pointed out.
So the first 10 or so, I sit down and interviewed and looked them in the eye and hired them myself. And then I knew what they were, you know, what they're all about. I knew their hearts were into it. I can't say enough about the thing that I was most worried about coming to this was that, wow, if I have, you know, the wrong team, it doesn't matter my skills or talents, that it's not going to succeed. I got to have the right people around me, but I couldn't have been more lucky. I feel like I hit the lottery when it comes to the staff that we had. So then I put my faith in them. They knew of the 1,400 previous Raven employees, they brought back the right 300 people to get this airline stood back up. And that's how it happened.
That's fantastic. Have any of the people that you initially rehired last year left you? Or have you left them?
There's been a couple, inner circle. One got hired with FedEx, and I can't blame her. She actually had the job with FedEx prior to Raven's restart, and she pushed them off to help us. And so that was so heartwarming that she was so important for us to help stand Raven back up that she pushed off a huge career opportunity for herself for later down the road. So she's left. And then one of our directors of quality had the career of a lifetime opportunity comes up. So, you know, I certainly don't begrudge anybody like that when they have an opportunity like that, but we've had such a deep bench that we've had people step up and they're growing into the roles and they're just doing a phenomenal job.
So tell me a little bit about the culture that you've built.
So it's a culture of trust and openness. I get told all the time, my door stands open unless I'm doing a podcast mm-hmm. like yours. But people can just walk in and it's funny, a year later, I still get people that will come in here, you know, be a little bit trembling and say, I've never even been on this side of the building. Cause it was just the previous culture was that, you know, you didn't go dare bother the man or the big guy. And I spend as much time, you know, walking around the building or walking over the terminal. I get on airplanes as often as I can to go out and see our communities. And I mm-hmm. just think that's important. And one of the things that I've done is every single Friday with maybe a couple failures in there, I send out a company-wide Friday update and say, here's where we are. And I started that clear back before we put the first airplane back in the air. And it was like, here's the challenges of this week. And here's the progress that we made. Here's still the stumbling blocks. And I've been, you know, as transparent as I possibly could be. And I think that has meant a lot to everybody, that they realize that we are a team and I'm sharing everything with everybody so that they know, you know, exactly where we stand, you know, if we're on time or, you know, if we're struggling in some area, whether it's financially or some maintenance issue, everybody knows. So right. I think that's been the biggest thing is that I've built trust with them, that they yep. know that, you know, we're not doing, you know, some kind of corporate shenanigans behind their back.
It's amazing what that kind of transparency will do for you, huh? For your credibility.
It really does. And it feels natural. It feels like, well, that's the way you should do it. And that's that, you know, we're all in this together in a team. And sometimes people let you down. Some people, they say things out of school that I wish I didn't. But on balance, I'm so glad that I did. I think that's the way is like you engender this family spirit that we're all pulling in the same direction.
What's been your biggest challenge, Rob?
You know, the biggest challenge is that I'm not from Alaska, and this is a wonderful place, but there's people that have spent their whole lives here. And so it's a very tight-knit community. Yeah. So there has been a little bit of struggle with some aspects of the business trying to break into, you know, kind of what might be considered an old boys club. Mm-hmm. And I get it. I'm not from here and I got to earn everybody's trust. And so there's been challenges like that where people have been more protective of business interests. And it's just because of the relationships that they have that I don't have. So I put that in the challenge column. It's not like, you know, I come at it with any kind of frustration or bitterness. It's more like I get it and I've got to pay my dues to get there.
Well, listen, and it'll take time. And the more people realize that you're, you know, as you mentioned, you know, you're a servant leader, right? So, and you're authentic about it. The more people actually realize that that's who you are and you're not there to blow sunshine up anyone's skirt, you know, they'll welcome you with open arms.
I think so. I feel like I've done right. You know, even when I've had to make, you know, tough announcements to competitors and stuff, they've always appreciated that I've had the integrity to tell them up in the front. So even if it's, I have to make difficult decisions or difficult conversations, being transparent about it has served me well. And you know, that I think is what's going to kind of help take us across the finish line.
Mm-hmm. So you're closing in on 400 employees. What is the makeup of those employees, you know, from a gender standpoint, and from a diversity standpoint?
We're fairly diverse. I don't know that I have the number off the top of my head, but we had to look at it just here recently. And coincidentally enough, we have a really high population. I think it's 15% Pacific Islanders, which having just come from Hawaii, you know, that seemed unique. And then, you know, obviously we have a lot of native Alaskans. Yep. So, you know, as Alaska is, you know, its own kind of entity disconnected from the rest of the United States, we have a very diverse population. I think mm-hmm. we're pretty close to 50-50 males to females. So okay. I'm happy with, you know, that we are an inclusive group and, you know, we're always looking for, you know, that next level of inclusivity and diversity.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any women in the executive suite?
We do. Our chief commercial officer is Tina Hanley.
Awesome. That's fantastic. And how many in the executive suite total?
Well, that we run a pretty lean ship. It was there was just four of us okay. the longest time, and we're adding a fifth person here shortly.
Good. In what role?
He's going to be so we're starting a separate division called Flycoin, which is going to be our frequent flyer program, but it's also it's also going to be more user friendly, where you can use your frequent flyer points more universally. So he's going to be CEO of that division, but he's also going to be CFO of Float Alaska, the parent company for all the airline holdings.
Oh, very interesting. So it sounds like, you know, what you've built is I think not unique in just maybe unique inside of the airlines industry, right? You know, where people can walk into your office if the door is open and say, hey, Rob, you know, do you have a few minutes?
I think it is fairly unique that, and I insist everybody does that. I mean, I tell people, if you're talking to Mr. McKinney, that's my father. So I'm Rob, Tom is Tom. And, you know, if I have the time, come in, you know, ping me on text. Everybody has my cell phone number. And if they have a problem, they know where to come. And it, luckily, it doesn't ring that often because people know that they have a resource to go to. So they're able to work it out. The one rule I did set up, though, is nobody has the right to fire anyone at Raven Alaska except me. If you get terminated, I have to be the one to be convinced to let you go. There's no manager at Raven Alaska that can terminate any employee.
Why is that?
Because I wanted people to feel secure. There was so much tumult last year between the pandemic and between the shutdown and not knowing, you know, I had faith that, you know, we got the right people, but I didn't know, you know, 300 people coming in the door in 30 days is not like I can know them all.
It's a lot.
I wanted people to feel safe and I wanted people to feel secure that, you know, you really have to try hard to get fired from here. It's not like something that you're just going to lose your job and be out on the street on some capricious reason. So I felt that was pretty important and it's worked out well and I've seen no reason to change it.
Well, that's fantastic. If somebody wanted to get into your industry, what kind of advice would you give them?
Well, it's a great time. I think that there was a really massive pilot shortage and mechanic shortage pre-pandemic. And while there was a lull here in the beginning, it's coming back fast. Mm-hmm. So go like I did. If it wasn't for guaranteed student loans, I couldn't be where I am today. So go to your community college that has a flight school and go get those student loans. And just go after it, because if you stay strong after it, it won't be long until you'll be having that dream job in aviation, whether it's in aviation maintenance or flight operations.
What was the lack of maintenance workers due to?
Well, it's the pilots and the maintenance are all kind of part and parcel of the same thing. The pilots is a little bit more specific because they changed the retirement age from 60 to 65 at the same time that the 2007 downturn hit. Right. So people that were kind of moving up their career, it just stopped suddenly.
Sure.
And so then it just backed all the way down. And so it's expensive to become a pilot if you try to do it on your own. So there was no incentive to go into that industry. And it just seemed like it was crazy. And it's the same thing, even though it didn't have the retirement age deal for the mechanics, it was still, there was no upward mobility there for the longest years after that shutdown. And so fewer people would go into maintenance school and fewer people were just available. And that backlog takes time. And then the military is not churning out pilots and mechanics like they once did.
Right.
So just this whole conglomeration to kind of make a perfect storm where there's just not enough bodies to fill the roles that we need.
That's really interesting. So what's your day-to-day look like as a CEO there?
That's the part that I love the most. That, you know, while the calendar is pretty full and, you know, I have lots of stuff to do, I'll sit down and have, you know, dig into what does the schedule look like and let's start planning for next winter and how many frequencies are we going to have to certain cities. And then we'll have a pricing meeting and what does pricing models look like? We'll talk marketing. And then I'll have a talk with the maintenance department and what struggles are we doing. We're currently adding our first 50 seat -300. So there's daily meetings on making sure that gets through all the FAA inspection process so that we can start flying that in revenue service. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always some kind of, there might be an HR problem or there's a customer complaint that I will end up dealing with personally.
Really?
That's the beauty of it is there's, you know, a lot of the days I don't know what's coming my way. And so it's always some new challenge to keep it fresh and interesting. And then, you know, you start just, you know, telling the world that you're going to fly Boeings to Asia, then, you know, that my day filled up even faster then.
Yeah, well, I'll be really interested in hearing how that goes. I think that's such a great idea, you know, to kind of look at, like you said, the Iceland Air, you know, the stopping in Iceland piece and that you're not actually competing against that. I think it's really interesting. I mean, if I were flying to Asia and flew from, you know, Denver to Anchorage, I would totally spend a few days there and either on the way out or on the way back.
Yeah, and the other upside to it is because people ask me, why wouldn't someone make a stop when you don't have to? Well, one is like, that's a long flight to be crammed in there. Oh, yeah. And so who wouldn't want to stretch their legs? The other upside is the customs and immigration here in Anchorage is wide open. So you're going to be standing in line with the people on that plane, not in a queue that could be 3 hours long at an LAX or San Francisco or one of these kinds of places. So there's, even if you don't take advantage of the Alaska piece, there's still an advantage, but one for cost. And then the second for just the comfort of ease of entering and exiting the United States.
That's really interesting. What would you say are the biggest opportunities and threats today in aviation?
Wow. There's always the threat of regulation. There's always kinds of jokes inside the industry that if the paperwork doesn't equal the gross weight of the airplane, you've missed something. When I go out and do talks and say, would you, if you had it all to do it over again, what would you do differently? And I say, well, I might go into a lesser regulated industry like nuclear power. So I'm always worried that, you know, government's going to do something that, you know, it's always the good intentions that could be lead, you know, to some kind of just horrible unintended consequence. Yeah. The amount of tax on aviation right now is about twice, sometimes three times what sin taxes are. So you put taxes on alcohol and firearms and tobacco to dissuade people from doing it, but then you have twice as many taxes on an airline ticket, which seems kind of out of whack. So government and regulation and unknowing, you know, as from administration to administration, what they're going to do. The price of oil obviously has a huge impact on what we do and kind of out of our control. There's, you know, you can hedge to some degree.
Right. So that's what I was going to ask you if you do that.
A huge risk. And again, that, but somewhat is controlled by administration, how their tack towards the oil business is. And, you know, that drives prices up just on speculation. So those two things. And then lastly is just like we already discussed, the labor shortage, in that we're really going to be proactive and we're starting to work with flight schools. We're going to create a fleet of smaller aircraft for people starting out their careers so that they can flow from that and then into our Dash 8 program and then on into our Boeing program. And what really jazzes about that is we're working with some members of Congress so that the Sallie Mae program doesn't just go to, you know, the biggest universities. It can go to accredited flight schools. Mm-hmm. So then we can go into inner cities. We can go into disadvantaged, you know, children that think that they have no hope whatsoever and would never even dream of a career in aviation. We can say, well, here's the pathway. You go to this school, you do the student debt. As long as you stay the course, we will pay the debt for you. And so you can have a career in aviation all the way through to the left seat of a Boeing aircraft flying internationally for free. And talk about the diversity that would bring and talk about the potential workforce that we would never be able to tap any other way. So we're really, really excited. Now that's a long-term play, but mm-hmm. we think that's going to be the future of our airline anyway, is that, you know, we can go create opportunities where absolutely none exist today.
That's right. And the key word there was proactive.
Yeah.
We live in such a reactive society. I talk about this all the time, you know, and by being reactive, it costs so much more time and money to do it that way.
It does, because we know this problem's coming and it's a solvable problem. There's plenty of workforce out there, but we got to create a pathway for them. Mm-hmm. We got to give them the hope that it's possible. And then we got to create a legitimate pathway where they can go from some of these really disadvantaged neighborhoods, cities, communities, and be able to hop on this career train that will take them anywhere they want to go, literally in the world.
Yeah. So you said you're going to, over the next year or by the end of next year, grow to about 500 people. You know, what does that next 100 employees look like? I mean, pilots, mechanics, you know, what is that?
It will be. It'll be all the people needed to stand up this Boeing program. So probably another 50 pilots, probably another 150 flight attendants, probably another 70 or so mechanics, and then all the ground support people that we will have to employ to unload baggage, check in passengers, okay. reservation agents. There's just, it's the airline business is a very labor intensive business.
There's no question about it. So do you have those people already in Alaska, or are you going to be fishing outside, you know, into the continental US to bring those people up there?
I think a lot of the people are already here. We're dedicated to Alaska. Our hearts are in Alaska now. So we want to provide every opportunity that we possibly can to create jobs right here in the state of Alaska. But clearly, I think that the depth of knowledge that we're going to need for a lot of these positions, we're going to have to look elsewhere. And certainly the continental U.S. partially, but again, where if we find talent anywhere in the world, then we're going to look to see bring in the best people.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. One of the last questions I wanted to ask you is, you were living in Maui, now you're living in Anchorage. Tell us about that shock.
Well, it was a little bit of a shock. It was funny. I went to the doctor right after I got here, and they were like filling out all the things. Like, who's your primary physician? And I said, well, I don't have one yet. And I said, because I just moved here. And they said, oh, Alaskans are so friendly. I said, where'd you move from? And I said, I just moved here from Maui. And they said, okay, so clearly you're here for a psych evaluation. it's actually been wonderful. As much as I love Maui, and I've spent 10 years there, and it was just a great, great place to live, so has been Anchorage. The people here are awesome. I love most everything about it. And it's really funny, Carol. People think I'm nuts when I say this, but there are a lot of similarities between Hawaii and Alaska. They're both disconnected from the rest of the United States. Right. They're both large tourism tourism. They both have lots of government and military presence. Yep. They both have large native populations.
Mm-hmm. So
except for the actual mean temperature, they're really similar.
Yeah.
But the snow wasn't bad, and I've just had a ball here.
That's fantastic. So what do you do on your free time now that you're in a completely different place? Hawaii is a pretty outdoors place. So is Alaska.
It is. So I love hiking in Maui, and I do the same thing here. I'm a pretty active tennis player, so I play that. They have lots of indoor tennis here, luckily. So when the weather is not so good, you can still play tennis indoors. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking forward to getting out on the lakes and doing some fishing. And there's just so many things. I feel fortunate. I was able to soak in everything that Hawaii had to offer, and I really left no stone unturned there. And I plan to do the exact same thing here. This last year has been pretty full for me. It's been a lot of focus on work, but it hasn't felt like work. It's felt like just a labor of love. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Now's the time that I gotta poke my head out of the office and go see this great outdoors that Alaska has. Mm-hmm.
So if somebody listening to this is thinking, wow, what a cool airline and what they've done with it, I'd sure like to investigate working for them. What should they do?
So all the jobs that we have are on ravenalaska.com. You'll clearly see all the careers page. They're all listed right there. And we have a phenomenal HR department. They actually have a sign up on the door. They're the coolest HR department anywhere, because most people
are they?
You'll get a response right away. And that's the best way to join the team.
And I should note that Raven is spelled R-A-V-N.
Exactly. Yeah. That was from the previous administration. Mm-hmm. And, it wasn't really my thing when I joined here, but it's grown on me, and it's become something that's near and dear to my soul. And that was kind of the joke that I told earlier on when Raven had the bad reputation. I said internally, we're going to keep working until Raven's not a 4-letter word anymore.
Right. Yeah. As you mentioned. Right. Well, Rob McKinney, CEO of Raven Alaska, thank you so much for joining me. This has really been an interesting conversation. And I sure hope that folks listening, especially your story about how you came to be at this airline and all the things that you've done, I hope it's a value to my listeners. I think it will be.
I hope it is too. And thanks so much for this opportunity, Carol. It was so much fun, and I look forward to meeting again sometime.
Okay. Thanks, Rob. Carol Schultz here. Thank you so much for listening to Authentically Successful. If you are a successful founder or CEO who would like to be on this program, please visit www.verticalelevation.com/podcast/apply. If you learned something from this interview and it made a difference, would you please share this episode on LinkedIn? You can also do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend. And if you know somebody that would be a great guest, tag them on LinkedIn or Twitter and let them know about the show, and include the hashtag Authentically Successful. I love seeing your posts and great suggestions. Lastly, we are regularly putting out new episodes and content. And to make sure you don't miss any, please subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. you want to know more, please go to my website, verticalelevation.com, or follow me on LinkedIn. This is Carol Schultz. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.